across Northern Ireland, on your radio, and on BBC Sounds. This is The Stephen Nolan Show!
You can tell it's nearly Christmas because the season of goodwill has broken out at Belfast City Hall. Sinn Féin and the Unionists have agreed that a new street in the city should be called Boyne Bridge Place. Sinn Féin say, yeah, Unionists, if you want to call that, that's fine. But what we want in return is the next time we want something in Irish, you show a more generous attitude. So in the season of goodwill, should there be a bit more give and take in politics? We also look at the scandal, and it is a scandal, the quality of the water in Belfast Lough. The blame game has begun. Meanwhile, swimmers like me and maybe you are left to swim in water which should be much, much cleaner. We talk about that, and also there's an inspirational story from a man who's suffering from motor neuron disease. It's a really, really cruel disease. In fact, I don't think there's any disease that is more cruel. There are plenty as cruel. But Raymond tells us his story. He's on a journey and he's getting a lot of help from none other than Lady Mary Peters. It's a great story. Have a listen on the podcast today. The Stephen Nolan Show! Good morning, it's Mark Simpson filling in for Stephen Nolan just for a couple of days. Now, there was a big surprise last night at the annual meeting, or the last meeting of the year, of Belfast City Council. There was no row over the Boyne Bridge. You can tell it's nearly Christmas. The parties all agreed, there was almost complete harmony, that when the bridge comes down, and as we know, it's coming down as we speak, that particular part of Durham Street near the new train and bus station should be renamed Boyne Bridge Place. Now, when Unionists proposed this, they expected a row, but there wasn't last night, and the DUP were delighted. Sinn Féin agreed, but, and there's normally a but at City Hall, they want something in return. They want Unionists to be a lot more generous when it comes to Irish language signs. Sandy Row traders want something too. We heard them on the news there. They want something to help them cope with the lack of footfall in their area, since one of the main roads into their area, Durham Street, was closed for the dismantling of the Boyne Bridge. Now, it's worse, apparently, than during the COVID pandemic, according to some traders. We're going to talk to one of the traders in a moment, try to test that out. But first of all, this name change, the DUP's Tracy Kelly says, it may not be a big deal to some people, but it is to the people of Sandy Row.
To some people, I know that this is only a bridge, and it's really disheartening, because to the local community, it's a huge part of their culture and their identity. We've all heard the story about King William walking past here on his way to the Battle of the Boyne, and that story means so much to the Sandy Row community.
So I was there last night. Tracy Kelly gets up, proposes the name change. All eyes then were focused on Sinn Féin, by far the largest party at City Hall. Would they try and stop this happening? No, they agreed to the name change. But their leader at City Hall, Kieran Beattie, also said this.
And although there was a bit of discussion around this, and I spoke to Councillor Kelly afterwards in relation to the name of this, and we have no problem with it tonight. But just to put it on record, when there's anything that comes to this council with the word Irish or anything associated with it, it's challenged. It is challenged at every single event, every single opportunity. And not only that, there's been legal challenges, there has been call-ins, there has been all sorts of obstructions put in place because they're Irish. Now, any other society, that would be called out for what it is. It's racism. That's what it is. And we have no problem with this one tonight, but just put the marker down again that anything Irish coming to this council that's not treated the same way, we will be calling it out for what it is.
So does Kieran Beattie have a point there? Ring in, text in 81771. Let us know what you think. We're going to talk about the traders in a moment, but first of all, let's deal very quickly with the politics. The DUP councillor, Tracy Kelly, is on the line. Tracy Kelly, are you going to be more generous? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark. It's going to be no surprise to you. I'll disagree with Kieran on that one. And there's been plenty of things that have been put through committee that relates to Irish that we have agreed and we haven't challenged. So I don't know where he was coming from last night with all of that, but there's been umpteen things put through committee that hasn't seen.
But the point is, and I was there, you saw me sitting there, I expected, because there was a bit of disagreement at the committee stage, I expected Sinn Féin to try and block your move last night, but they didn't. They were generous.
Well, I didn't expect them to try and block up last night, to be totally honest with you. I thought that it would have been through fine. We're not asking for much to have where the Boyne Bridge is currently sitting. The street renamed Boyne Bridge Place, as I said in council last night, Mark, but this has always been seen as Sandy Road to the local community. And when TransLink first pitched the new hub to us, and it was roughly about 10 years ago, we always seen that as Sandy Road. We're very surprised to see it as Durham Street. I went back and checked quite a few maps, going back years just to make sure. But I didn't think they would challenge it last night, and I'm glad they didn't. And as Kieran said, I did speak to him after committee.
Just on a side issue, do you really believe the King Billy story, Tracy, honestly?
Yes, I do, Mark. I do.
You do?
I wouldn't stand up in council and say that. The Sandy Road community are very proud of that
okay.
story. And yes, we do believe it.
Okay. And the story is, within the Sandy Road, now obviously nobody was around in 1690, but that was part of his traditional route to the Boyne.
Yes.
Okay.
That is the story. He walked past there on the route to the Boyne. He walked past plenty of places on the route to the Boyne, but for the Sandy Road community particularly, that is an important part of their history and their culture, and which is why they fought so hard to save it.
Well, he probably wouldn't be going now because some of the shops are closing. We'll come to that. Let's deal with the politics first of all. Former Ulster Unionist councillor Chris McGimpsey's on the line. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Mark.
Do you think Kieran Beattie from Sinn Féin had a point there?
Well, I'm not sure what he's getting at, to tell you the truth, because funding to Irish language groups and other organisations in, if you like, Irish language areas, Belfast has always been very generous. Belfast City has always been very generous. So I don't know what he's talking about, names and so on. The whole concept of the Irish language should and was at a time non-denominational. And it should continue so to be, and that's we're seeing that now slowly emerging in Belfast. I think Kieran was just purely looking for an excuse to act a bit difficult, and he's almost claiming that to agree to a wee back street called Boyne Bridge Place is a major concession from Sinn Féin, and it's not, of course.
Well, Chris, you would know that given our equality legislation, you know, somebody could have made a song and dance about that and said it's not inclusive enough in terms of a name.
Well, I mean, there are many non-inclusive names throughout the island of Ireland. I mean, I, for example, I go down to Central Station and get the train down to Connolly Station once a month when I go to my Orange Lodge. My Orange Lodge is in Dublin. And I don't feel a bit offended or threatened or anything else, the fact that the station is called after James Connolly. It never was. It was always Amiens Street before. Now it's James Connolly. I mean, people need to get a grip of themselves. I mean, this is just, some of this is just posturing by Sinn Féin. I think it's unfortunate Sinn Féin are still at the position where they have to posture and they have to look upon supporting Boyne Bridge Place as a massive concession. It's not a massive concession whatsoever.
Would you have preferred a different name for the local train and bus station?
It's surprising. There's an older generation. Oh, for the train and bus station in Belfast?
Yes.
Yeah, I asked. They first came to us, and I was still on council, and they assured us at that committee meeting, and unfortunately they weren't in those days, that they had talked closely to the Sandy Row community, and they weren't fussed one way or the other whether Boyne Bridge was retained or not. I personally, which I don't believe, and I think the evidence has indicated that they were being disingenuous. I can see no reason why the central station or the, this new station could have been called Boyne Bridge Central Station. It would have had historic links, and as the councillor from Sandy Row has just said, and it should not be something which is an issue for anybody, frankly. And it would have been an historic linkage to the past.
And just while I have you on the King Billy story, as a local historian, do you believe it or is it a myth?
Oh, well, it's a very strong myth. Let's say it's very feasible. Sandy Row is called Sandy Row and was populated by weavers because they needed water for the linen and so on. And it would make sense that they would follow when armies moved. They didn't go up and down hills. They usually went along river valleys. So it would make sense that they would have moved on down along that. What was that river? And so I think it's sensible enough. And don't forget the other end of Sandy Row. You've got a small park, which is called King William's Park.
That's right, that's right.
He's supposed to have rested there.
Speaking of Sandy Row, I went down, albeit at around 5 o'clock last night, whenever a lot of shops would be closing anyway. Oh, my goodness. It was very run down. Very few shoppers around. I don't think I saw a Christmas tree or many Christmas lights. Let's talk to one of the local traders, Sarah Teer. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
Tell us about your business quickly.
Well, I'm cut above canine grooming. I'm a dog groomer in Sandy Row. We're usually a successful business, a profitable business, and at the moment we are not at all.
How bad is it?
30% loss over October and November.
Sorry, 30% loss over October and November, which is 30%. Since Durham Street closed and the new station opened. Okay.
Yeah, and, you know, the loss is even when clients are coming en route to appointments, they're cancelling en route because they can't sit for an hour in traffic. And that's so destroying.
So have you changed your opening hours?
Yes, we are now opening from 7:30 a.m. in hopes the clients will miss the chaos and be able to drop their dogs in earlier. We're then having to stay open later for pickup times. It's taken our clients an hour to get to us.
Are you the same Sarah that addressed the City Council last night?
Yes, I am.
How did it go down? Did you get much feedback?
Yeah, I got a feedback from a few of our clients. I think they were slightly unaware how bad the situation is. You know, it's even sad looking out at Sandy Row. Sandy Row is like a ghost town.
It is actually, Sarah.
Yeah. It's like a ghost town. We have no footfall. And a lot of the businesses in Sandy Row depend on that footfall.
I might come up and see you. I mean, are there even any Christmas lights or was it just me I couldn't spot them?
Very, very few. It's just like we've been forgot about.
So, you were asking councillors for help.
Yes.
Did you get any?
Not so far. You know, it would be happy enough if there was an accessible route into Sandy Row for customers. I know that Tracy had put forward a motion for Wellwood Street to turn it into a two-way system, and it was denied.
And I know you're looking maybe for free parking for an hour. Obviously, you'd love a rates relief. Tracy Kelly, is there anything the City Council can do on that front?
Well, the motion is going to committee to be discussed, Mark. It wasn't going into the council chamber for debate. So I am wanting those members of that committee to discuss maybe setting up a stakeholders group, try and get some professional help to the traders in Sandy Row. What struck me last night was Sarah saying that she's having sleepless nights. And when I spoke to traders just as the bridge closed, the first week of that, they were totally oblivious that it was even closing that Saturday. They had no notification, no communication. I'd given them a letter that Edwin Poots had received just so that they would know at least the direction the traffic would be going, etc. in the area. But the sleepless nights and just absolute being ignored is all I can see. The traders had from TransLink and others has been horrendous. So I'm hoping that the committee will come together and support my motion to have a stakeholders group set up. Maybe look at signage, look at rate relief, and look at ways that we can professionally try and get some support in there.
And Tracy Kelly, you said last night you feared some businesses could go under. We have one on the line, Sarah. Sorry to ask you live on Radio Ulster, but do you fear for your business's future?
Yeah, I really do. You know, I was looking at other options, which is it's awful. I love Sandy Row. I love the community. I love the business community. We're all like a big family. Everyone knows each other. It's really sad and it's heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking.
With 30% down staring you in the face at the moment, how long do you think you could survive at that level?
I'd be lucky to get to March next year.
How does that make you feel?
Devastated, absolutely devastated. I've put everything into this little business. You know, the soul is drawing.
Chris McGimsey, knowing city councils as you do, I can see the biggest problem here being that if you help out Sandy Row, well, then Botanic or Great Victoria Street will say, what about us? Do you think there's any hope for Sarah and everyone else on Sandy Row?
Well, I think there has to be. The inner city communities have got to get the lion's share of development. Can I say, Mark, 30 years ago, I was had a property development company, and I invested almost £500,000 in Sandy Row doing a development. I can tell you, planners and everybody else were not helpful, but we managed to get in. But it was we did that investment with our company because it was decided by the heart, not the head, and it probably wasn't a clever economic decision. But there needs to be more investment. They need to attract more private development into Sandy Row shops. I mean, to try and get some of the shops up again. And Sandy Road is a special case. It's one of the closest communities to the City Hall, probably the closest community to the City Hall, and it has to be seen as a special case, and it needs to be dealt with, even irrespective of the historic significance of Sandy Road. It's something which is crucial, I think, to our whole development of our centre. Because if we say big shops in Great Victoria Street are great, which they are. But we also say the local community, indigenous community living in close to the city centre, don't really get extra support or help. Well, then there's something seriously wrong with the way in which we're developing our city centre.
The realpolitik, of course, everyone, is that if only unionists are looking out for Sandy Row, you'll not get anything passed at City Hall. So let's talk to a nationalist. Let's talk to the SDLP councillor, Carl White. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning, Mark.
Would you back a proposal to help out the traders of Sandy Row?
I think that anything that can be done for traders on Sandy Row, which was a bustling and flourishing part of Belfast. I remember as a young child being taken to Reid to get new shoes for events like First Communion and Confirmation. And it's a pity to see the way the street has fallen on hard times, and that's been exacerbated by the recent events that you've reported on at the Boyne Bridge. So yes, anything that supports retailers in that part of Belfast is welcome. Of course, the first people that will be asked to provide that support will be Belfast City Council, no doubt. Even though other departments have the responsibility for economic regeneration for areas like Sandy Row, and they are departments of the NI Executive.
To look at the positive, were you surprised that last night's Belfast City Council meeting was so harmonious? Even the Lord Mayor, Mickey Murray, was wearing a Christmas jumper.
Yeah, I think that last night's meeting shows that behind the sort of public rancor between politicians, we often see actually people are happy to work together. We were supportive of the move, the renaming of that part of the street. I think it's a testament to the history of that area and how attached the community in that area are to their bridge. And I think it's a welcome move. Absolutely happy to see it happen. You know, if we're going to choose between Boyne Bridge or Durham, which is our links with the Boyne are stronger than our links with Durham, then I'm happy to see that. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think Kieran Beattie from Sinn Féin had a point in terms of reciprocation?
I think, you know, it's not a question of this for that, to be honest, you know.
Carl, seriously? Seriously? Well, whether it be Stormont or Belfast City Hall or the Guildhall?
Well, it hasn't really got us anywhere in the last 20 years, Mark.
300 years, maybe some might say.
Yeah, you know, I think that it showed some goodwill and you know, positive engagement by all councillors to see that happen. I think that Grand Central, you know, has had lots of problems. Let's be honest, since its opening, and you know, I've said this a couple of times now. What should have been a switch on moment for the people of Belfast and public transport has been a real, real switch off moment. And I think that the community of San Niro have felt that probably more than anyone else. And we've seen that in recent days and weeks with their campaign for the bridge. And I think that this shows that they've been listened to some extent. Whether we get into this or that in the future, you know, that we'll see. I'd hope that there'd be some degree of reciprocation from unionist politicians down the line.
And Tracy Kelly, some might say this has happened, maybe not on your watch, but on the DUP's watch, that Sandy Row has been just left to decline.
Yeah, Sandy Row has been land banked for many years, Mark, since the transport hub was first mentioned. And I worked in the community in Sandy Row at that time. The developers moved in and bought up land very quickly. And you will notice the decline over maybe the last 10 years and the gaps in Sandy Row where they came in, bought land, demolished shops and houses and just left it to rot with no desire whatsoever to redevelop. And if you walk from the bottom of Sandy Row to the top, that's very evident. Now, we are starting to see some of those pieces of land being sold now. And thankfully, they are now interested that the hub is open, but they're interested in developing. But for many, many years, you can't force developers to sell land and you can't force them to build. And we have tried as a party to do that.
You could make them pay higher rates.
You could. And we had the minister in Sandy Row a few months ago with the dilapidation bill that's going through Stormont as well to discuss that and let him see for himself the state the place is in because of developers. So there is work in progress in the background, Mark, and we as a party have been trying to do that. But you mentioned earlier on Botanic Avenue and Great Victoria Street.
Yes.
They might.
What about us? They'll be screaming at their radios.
That's something we want something. But I think in all fairness, if you look at Great Victoria Street and Botanic Avenue is absolutely buzzing. And Great Victoria Street over the last couple of years has had a bit of a facelift with the EFC and council investing quite heavily there. So you've seen the murals go up, the tidy up, the cleanups. That's what we need in Sandy Row as well. We need something similar in that area. And Edwin was on the radio this morning. And
Edwin Poots.
Yes, he was on the radio this morning. He did say that the Minister for Communities has come back to him with some kind of scheme for the area. Oh. That would usually happen when the Boyne Bridge is down and the public realm is all in place. They then do those kind of schemes. But he's willing to intervene early and he'll be liaising with us and council on that.
Well, that is good news for Sandy Row traders.
Yeah,
let's get our quick first call of the day on this. Dan's on the line. Dan from Lisburn. Hi, Dan.
How you doing, Mark? Mark, see, your hypothesis there that, you know, there should be reciprocation on the Irish Language Act is absolutely preposterous. Because the fact is, when Sinn Féin left government, in protest of the RHI scandal, they then turned it to a demand for an Irish Language Act. Ransom politics and the Irish Language Act being their ransom to get them back into government. But as part of that New Decade, New Deal approach, unionists were promised that they would be that your library would be restored.
Dan, sorry to interrupt. I think the general point, without getting bogged down in the detail, is that we just need a bit more give and take in politics.
Oh, yes, of course you do, Steve. I mean, with give and take, look at the give and take there we had the other day when NECAP was able to claim its rights under the Belfast Agreement and unionism cannot have any protection from the most fundamental part of the Belfast Agreement, which is that the UK is the sovereign parliament for Northern Ireland. And you yourself, Mark, I have to say I was really surprised at you whenever Stormont was restored and Hilary Benn went up. The first question you asked was, what will happen to... Casement Park
yes.
be built?
Yeah, guilty as charged.
Yes, isn't that right?
Guilty as charged.
So there you are once again.
Guilty as charged.
We have rollover unionists.
Okay.
But
I hear you, Dan. I hear you. Let me just tell you why I think, and I still think, as a political analyst or somebody who's followed politics at Stormont for the last 34 years, I think it's a big test. I think it's where you can see a lot about the dynamics of Stormont politics. What happens or doesn't happen in terms of Casement Park? Anyway, that's the case for the defence. Tracy Kelly, thank you very much indeed. Chris McGimsey, thanks to you. Sarah Tier. Sarah, I might come down and see you. I don't have a dog, but could I come down and see you in Sandy Row one of these days?
Of course you can. That would be great.
I see. Would you give me a haircut?
Yes, that's no problem. I can do that.
Sarah, thanks very much indeed. Keep your calls coming on the Boyne Bridge. And also, we want to hear from swimmers. Big, big problems in Belfast Lough. And if you're one of those people, and there are thousands, even this week, who go in swimming in Helens Bay, Groomsport, Donaghadee, Bangor, or across the lough, round near Whitehead or Carrickfergus, there are big problems in the water that we're all swimming in. Text in, phone in. We want to hear what you've got to say. The time is coming up to just after 9:30. Let's get a news update. Swimmers, we need to hear from you. What do you think about that news this morning, broken by BBC Spotlight, about the state of Belfast Lough? 0 30 30 80 55 55. There's no point complaining to me the next time you bump into me in my Speedos on Helens Bay Beach. Here's your chance, here's your window, here's your platform. Speak to everyone listening on Radio Ulster, 0 30 30 80 55 55. Pick up the phone. I don't bite. There's nothing to be worried about, but there's a lot to be worried about in Belfast Lough. We heard the news there from Amy. Northern Ireland Water has admitted breaching the law hundreds of times each year by releasing untreated sewage into Belfast Lough. Have a look at Spotlight on the iPlayer. Here's a quick 30 or so seconds from it, maybe around a minute. It's the moment when the Spotlight reporter Patrick Fee challenged Northern Ireland's water Paddy Brow over the levels of raw sewage in Belfast Lough.
They just discharge it into the River Conswater, so the first flush just gets pumped straight into the river.
But that's, so that's raw feces, that's wet wipes, condoms, whatever, just dumped into the river?
So the condoms and the wet wipes will actually be screened out.
What about the faeces?
That just goes straight through, so the bacteria. That's effectively where it ends up, in Belfast Lough. And we're seeing water quality declining.
Is that legal?
It's not. It doesn't comply with legislation.
Non-compliance with legislation is one way of putting it. That's breaking the law, isn't it?
It is breaking the law, yeah. Well, number one priority for us is not to allow property flooding. So everything is totally focused around not allowing people's houses to flood with sewage.
That's very understandable, but for Northern Ireland Water, in this case, what that means is choosing to illegally pollute the river next door.
We have no other choice.
We have no other choice. Really? NI Water says they cannot keep up with demand, blaming decades of underfunding. Now, Helens Bay on the shores of Belfast Lough, as we know, is perhaps the most popular bathing spot close to Belfast Lough. And Spotlight talked to some swimmers about their findings.
Helens Bay is really special. It's a place anyone can come. It's free. We just got to protect it so people can enjoy it, so our kids can enjoy it.
We've even had dolphins come in all the way up here, which is really rare, and we've all been so excited at the opportunity to see that. It's amazing.
That's fantastic.
Water users are here throughout the year, surfers, swimmers, paddleboarders. We shouldn't be swimming in shit.
And I've been down here swimming one day, beautiful, clear blue water, but a literal stream of brown coming past.
Yeah, you can see it.
You can literally see the streams coming out.
Have you guys all seen...
Yeah, and in sanitary pads. One thing is testing, the other thing is monitoring, and the third thing is enforcement, actually going after the polluters,
Ah, I recognise that voice. That's Alicia. She features on the programme. She runs a group down there called Helen's Bay Watch. Swimmers who go in all year round, and they're worried. If you're worried, pick up the phone, have a word with us. The Agriculture Minister, the Environment Minister, Andrew Muir, he's worried too. He watched the programme. It's been on the iPlayer since 7 o'clock this morning. He watched it first thing, and I asked him what he thought.
I am appalled at what's been reported today, and sadly it's not surprising because I have been raising these concerns for a while, and the situation we have with regards to the volume of sewage being pumped into Belfast Lough is nothing short of a thundering disgrace, and any water should hold their heads in shame for the situation they're doing as a polluter into Belfast Lough and other rivers, lakes and lochs around Northern Ireland. But what more, I'm taking action in relation to this because I am Minister of Agriculture, Environment and Rural Affairs, and I take this environmental portfolio very seriously, and there's a number of actions I'm taking forward. So firstly, since NA Water was established in 2007, there has been an arrangement in place known as SORPI, which essentially means that there's a different regulatory regime for NA Water, and they get a buy ball in relation to a lot of the pollution that they're causing. I've made it clear previously that I'm calling time on this, that it's not fit for purpose. I ask officials to review it. That review is coming to a conclusion, and I'll be announcing next steps in the new year around that. And what's that likely to mean is that there'll be more prosecutions against NI Water for their pollution activities. Also, in terms of the inner Belfast Lough shellfish area, I intend to proceed and make a designation on that as a sensitive area. I will require executive agreement, and I'm hopeful I will get that. And that would require NI Water to have the appropriate treatment of water discharges discharging in the area. The other issue is in terms of the flow compliance and knowing what's coming out of these wastewater treatment works. And as an outworking of my action on SORPI, I will be considering how I can force NI Water to install this equipment so we know the problem exactly that is being perpetrated against the people who are using Belfast Lough as, and other areas as recreational areas.
Why has it taken the BBC's journalism to force ministers to act like this?
So I've been taking action on a number of these areas already. I already asked officials to commence the work in terms of SORPI and ending that special regime in place for any water. I've already made the decision to designate Belfast Lough Inner Shellfish Area as a sensitive area, and that's something that's already underway. So these actions have been taken already around it all. And sadly, what we're seeing in terms of the reports today and the Spotlight documentary is a complete demonstration of how our environment has not been properly catered for, and how NI Water, as one of the biggest polluters in Northern Ireland, the damage that they are causing to our rivers, lakes and lochs, it's not acceptable. I am really, really angry that NI Water are continuing to do this, and they need to sort themselves out.
They say they have no option. They don't have enough money to fix the problem.
Well, that's for them to work through with their department around this issue. But they're a polluter. They're polluting Belfast Lough. There is sewage flowing around the lough. There's people wishing to swim in the lough and use other water-based activities who are concerned around that, and it's not acceptable, and we need to stop the situation. On the bathing water and the testing, as you know, my department undertakes testing between the 1st of June and the 15th of September in conjunction with the bathing operators. We do have standing advice that bathers should not swim for up to 48 hours after heavy rainfall, and we do promote that. I am aware of the Office of Environmental Protection's report around bathing water about having a all-year-round testing regime, and particularly at other locations. That would be my ambition, and that's something we're considering with officials in terms of how we can roll out that further testing around us. But the most fundamental we need to do is stop the pollution.
But just shouting on the radio or in person at NI Water probably won't make much of a difference. Together, should executive ministers, you, the Department for Infrastructure and everyone else concerned and NI Water not get round the table and find out how you're going to solve this quickly?
So I got round the table twice with the Infrastructure Minister, including last Monday, around this issue, and briefed them on some of the actions I'm taking, particularly in terms of designating the inner Belfast Lough shellfish area as sensitive, and also the plans in relation to SORPI. So he has been updated on that. There is a Northern Ireland Audit Office report which came out in March of this year. I know business are backing this call. I would back the call. It is clearly within the report from the Audit Office that they would encourage the Department and NI Water to complete a comprehensive review of alternative funding and governance arrangements led by suitably qualified experts.
And so what's that? Are we talking water rates here, Andrew Muir?
Well, the Alliance Party published a party policy recently in relation to this, and we back the concept of mutualisation, where you move the governance model of NI Water to separate so that they can borrow additional funding to invest in the infrastructure, which can allow them to address a lot of these issues. And that party policy paper is on our website. We have been very, very clear that in terms of additional bills for people, that's not something we support. But we support a look at the governance model of NI Water so we can get ourselves out of this situation.
But we can't have it both ways here. We can't watch our lock disintegrate and at the same time do nothing about it, even take a little bit of pain in our own pockets.
So I'm taking the action I can as Minister responsible for the environment, and I've outlined that to you. We do need to have responsible conversations around how we fund public services. I'm disappointed that the Finance Minister, when seeking to reform our rating system, has been unable to get agreement from that, from the First Minister and the Deputy First Minister. We need to face up to these issues. We're spending hundreds of millions of pounds for the cost of division in Northern Ireland. We should be able to tackle that issue as well. It requires difficult decisions. And believe me, I am taking the difficult decisions.
Yeah, but it's back to the blame game with respect. Everybody's telling everybody else what they should be doing. Is there not a crisis, a Loch Ness-style crisis here, that you all need to get round the table and stop blaming each other for not doing enough?
So I've got round the table with the Infrastructure Minister.
Yeah, but where's NI Water? Where's the First and Deputy First Minister?
Well, NI Water hopefully will be on your show explaining the situation that's in relation to Belfast Lough, because they are a polluter and they should be explaining themselves in relation to this. I have been very clear and outlined to the Assembly on the 4th of November that if we do not see the investment in wastewater infrastructure, I sadly feel we're on course to Belfast Lough becoming our next Loch Ness.
I'm sorry to interrupt again, Andrew Muir, but in your own words, they have had a bye ball. You can't change your mind on this, albeit you've only been in post for less than a year. But in your own words, NI Water were given a bye ball and they used it.
And I'm seeking to draw that to a conclusion, and I'm taking action in regards to that. So that's the difference between previous ministers and myself. I'm taking action on this. I asked the officials to review the arrangements in place for NI Water. That is coming to a conclusion, and I'll be announcing next steps from that in the new year, because I don't think it's acceptable that NI Water do get that separate regulatory regime compared to other polluters. I continue to support John O'Dowd for funding in terms of wastewater infrastructure. You'll not find many ministers who would support other ministers to get funding, but I will continue to do that.
Finally, let's talk about swimming. You know I'm a swimmer. You know personally a lot of the other swimmers around Bangor and Helens Bay, Donaghadee, Groomsport. Is it safe for us to go swimming this week?
So I was speaking to one of the swimmers only last night, and the open water swimming is something that many people take part in. And I'm glad to see that, because it's good for not for your physical, but also for your mental health. We issue guidance in regards to this. And one aspect of that guidance is that bathers should not swim 48 hours after heavy rainfall, and would reiterate that. There is many beaches across the Northern Ireland which are very, very attractive and safe to swim in, generally taking into account the issue around heavy rainfall, such as Croppersburn and Helens Bay. And we need to get ourselves in a situation where people are not having to worry about these sewage pollution incidents.
And you talked earlier about testing all year round rather than just during the summer months. Why aren't you doing that already?
Well, we're not doing that at the moment because of the resource challenges within my department. And that's something that I'm working through in terms of our budget situation. I can do more if I have the finances associated with that. And that's something the Office of Environmental Protection report I found is a constructive suggestion, and we'll be considering what we can do over the time ahead. And one of the other issues is about designating further areas,
yes,
and that's something under consideration as well.
The likes of Brompton, where I was yesterday. Final question. Forget about heavy rainfall. By and large, is it safe for people like me to put our head under the water in places like Helens Bay now?
So I have regularly went swimming, for example, at Croppersburn and Helens Bay. I remember on one Christmas Eve, I did do that as well. And in line with the guidance that we issue, it is safe to use places like that, taking into account the caveats that I've outlined to people. But we want to get a situation where we don't have to issue those caveats or those warnings around heavy rainfall or other areas such as what the bathing operators issue. It's important that we have people have confidence to use bathing waters without those worries.
And back to the big picture. I did say that was my last question. I mean, is this going to come up at the executive? Are you treating this like an emergency?
So this has come up at the executive. It's been discussed on a number of occasions. It's been agreed that we would have a specific meeting around the issue of wastewater infrastructure. So it is there. We are working collaboratively on it. But can I say that the situation is not acceptable? It's not acceptable because of the environmental damage that's been done. Also in terms of the lack of infrastructure, investment in wastewater treatment plants is having it in terms of the building of housing and economic development. And that's why we need to change the gear and we need to look at different ways forward around this, because continuing the situation is not on. I will do all I can as minister, and a lot of that is around regulation and enforcement. I intend to step that up against NI Water, but we need to have a situation where the sewage is not going in to Belfast Lough and other areas in the future.
Minister, thank you very much indeed. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was Minister Andrew Muir, an occasional swimmer. Let's talk to a regular swimmer in and around Belfast Lough. Susan is on the line. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning.
Will you ever go back in again?
Absolutely.
You will?
It's a necessity for me because I find that it's really, really good for pain relief. So without that, my alternative is to go on to steroids. And that's what I've been putting off for the last 3 years. So
oh, bless you.
It's for me, it's a lifesaver, you know. And oh. I mean, watching that programme was absolutely horrific. Although now, I know you lot all swim around the Gold Coast, but us that swim in actually Belfast Lough at White Abbey and Carrickfergus, I've never really come across anything in the water whilst I've been swimming.
Mm.
Although we didn't put my head in the water, but some of our group do. So, you know, I mean, it's you take your choices. But it's just dreadful that it has got to this stage. And what worries me is this people getting a bye-ball. If there are regulations, they're there for a reason.
And would
Nobody
you
should be getting a bye-ball?
Would you back the fact that NI Water seem to be facing fines here potentially? But that could just make a bad situation worse in that they'll then have less money to sort out the problem.
Well, I mean, where does that money go? It's different over in the mainland because, you know, you're finding the shareholders really of those water companies over there. We're finding our own government and our government are going to pay their own fine.
Yeah.
You know, that's just a circle of nonsense, really.
Yeah.
It's just basically they need to do something about it, yeah. You know, even to highlight. If they're not getting fined for it, at least if they're on the news to say, oh, NI Water has been fined £50,000, and then next month they've been fined again.
Yeah.
That kind of thing coming up on the news is going to awaken people to actually what's going on in this country.
Susan, don't worry, I heard your little dig at the Gold Coast there. We're going to go live to the Gold Coast. We're going to go to North Down, Ulster Unionist MLA, Alan Chambers. Did you hear the dig, Alan?
Marketed. We're used to it.
We're used to it, yeah. Was it the have-nots and the have-yachts? We've heard it all. We've heard it all. But the serious question, Alan, what do you make of what Spotlight has uncovered today?
Well, Mark, Belfast Lough should be a jewel in the crown of Northern Ireland's tourism offer and a safe recreational playground for the local population. But instead, it has been allowed, quite obviously, to become a third-world sewage dumping ground. That is a major public health threat, and it's only going to get worse. This all came into the public domain some weeks ago when I asked the Minister at question time in the Assembly, Minister Muir, if he would agree with the assertion of a whistleblower who said to me that Belfast Lough has the potential to become the new Loch Nay in the next 10 years. His reply was, if investment is not made quickly in wastewater infrastructure affecting Belfast Lough, I feel that sadly we are on course for seeing Belfast Lough become our next Loch Nay, with serious and substantial water quality breakdown. And that is what is happening. And it is really only get worse. And I'm delighted to hear the Minister say that the Alliance Party are supporting the mutualisation of Northern Ireland Water, because this is a policy that my party, the Ulster Unionist Party, has been promoting for a number of years. And the Minister simply won't even consider the option.
Well, that's interesting. Is it going to come up any time soon at Stormont? Just briefly, Alan Chambers.
Well, as far as I can see and what I hear and what I've even heard this morning in the programme, is there's lots of window dressing going on, but I think it's not talk we need, it's action.
Action.
And the money is going to have to be found to upgrade all these wastewater treatment works that aren't complying with regulations. And the only way that we see as a party is to bring in mutualisation of Northern Ireland Water.
Okay. Alan, thank you. From the Gold Coast back to East Antrim, before you go, Susan, you're definitely going back in.
Absolutely. Absolutely am.
Well, maybe get a swim together one of these days. Where do you recommend? Where do you recommend?
Down away to Abbey Green, just down there, okay. Past me in Abbey Two Station.
Right.
You're welcome anytime.
See you soon. Susan, okay, thank you.
Thanks to Susan.
Thanks to Alan Chambers. We really wanted to talk to NI Water. They wouldn't come onto the show today, or they weren't available. We also asked the Minister for the Department for Infrastructure onto the show. He wasn't available, but his department did provide a statement, and you can see a lot of this in Patrick Fee's story, which is on the BBC News NI website, and you'll see it, of course, on Spotlight on the iPlayer. It's there now. Let me read you out some of this statement from the Department for Infrastructure. During the financial year, NI Water has been allocated a budget of almost £500 million, which is just under 40% of the total non-ring-fenced budget available for the entire department. Other governance models suggested to date all involve the introduction of domestic water charges. The Minister has repeatedly made his position clear. He will not be introducing domestic water charges. The Minister acknowledges the significant financial pressures NI Water are operating under. However, they must work with this funding, prioritise accordingly, and not approach issues with a blanket response that finances are always to blame. We'll have a lot more on that, maybe after 10 o'clock and also during the rest of the week. Sadly, it's an issue that's not going away. Speaking of not going away, Greg Wallace is still on our TV screens. The TV presenter is still on, presenting pre-recorded editions of MasterChef in spite of the misconduct allegations against him. He stepped aside last week from further work on the BBC after an investigation revealed allegations of inappropriate sexual comments and inappropriate behaviour. Those allegations, Greg Wallace denies. And he said on Sunday, you maybe saw this on Instagram, he said the allegations, and many people find this very distasteful. He said they came from middle-class women of a certain age. Yesterday, he issued some sort of an apology.
I want to apologise for any offence that I caused with my post yesterday and any upset I may have caused it to a lot of people. I wasn't in a good headspace when I posted it. I've been under a huge amount of stress, a lot of emotion. I felt very alone, under siege yesterday when I posted it. It's obvious to me I need to take some time out now while this investigation is underway. I hope you understand, and I do hope that you will accept this apology.
So how has the BBC handled this? Should Greg Wallace still be on our TV screens? Ironically enough, he was on just before 10 o'clock last night, and then there was a big story about him straight afterwards on the BBC 10 o'clock news. Roger Mosey knows all about BBC TV news. He used to be the leader of it. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning.
How do you think Auntie has handled this?
Well, I think the first thing is there's been way too much news coverage. It's a perfectly reportable story. But I think you're right. If you look at what's happening in the world at the moment with Aleppo or civil war in Georgia looming or the pardon for Biden, it was kind of ludicrous that the 6 o'clock news on the BBC was still making Greg Wallace the main story yesterday. So I think there's a sense of proportion that BBC News seems to have lost at the moment. However, there is a clearly reportable public interest story in is Greg Wallace behaving properly as a presenter? And it's right to investigate that. And it's right there's an investigation going on now.
Do you think MasterChef should still be on our tellies?
Look, I think this is one of those ones that is a no-win for the BBC. If you take it off, and I'm quite a fan of MasterChef, actually. I like the programme. And, you know, if you're watching MasterChef The Professionals and you now have it taken away in finals week, I think quite a lot of people in the audience will be pretty annoyed about that. On the other hand, we've got a Christmas schedule coming up in which cheeky chappy Greg Wallace is going to be looming with the BBC promising great banter. And that also feels a bit jarring. So I don't think the BBC can win on this one. They've probably done the least worst thing in the circumstances.
Off the fence, Roger. What would you do?
No. Well, look, if you want the judgment that splits it, I think you keep The Professionals going because The Professionals is coming to its end. Maybe the Christmas specials you think about, could they be Christmas specials in a year's time? Look, I don't know. I think this is one of the ones where the BBC can't win, so I'm not going to make a definitive judgment.
You still have a deep love, I'm sure, for the BBC. You had many, many great years there. Is your heart a little sore when it seems to be one controversy after another at the moment regarding TV presenters?
Well, look, I'm always careful what I say about presenters in present company. But the thing is that presenters are essential for programmes. However, presenters also can sometimes, be a bit difficult to work with, or they have their moments, which...
Careful, Roger.
everybody does. Yeah. And that's a challenge, because if you have someone who really is a big show and they are leading that show, in that case, the employment of all the staff on it depend on that person. And it can be challenging saying, actually, you know what, you shouldn't have said that to that woman contestant on MasterChef. So I can see how it happens. And also, you know, presenters have a vulnerability in that they are the people in the spotlight. So when you get cross with the BBC, you actually get cross with, Sophie Raworth rather than the managers who've made her do what they do. So this is a difficult area. But I think, the truth is that some behaviour by people on some of the shows like MasterChef has clearly not been reported properly to managers or on Strictly Come Dancing. And the BBC needs to work out how it gets the culture of those programmes better so that people don't feel uncomfortable doing what they're doing and they can make complaints properly.
I'm sure you could tell some great stories about how you used to manage BBC talent.
Well, I can tell you one thing from my very early days when I was a producer and one of the editors on the Today programme wrote the word obey in mirror writing on the studio wall between us and the presenters, telling them that they had to do what they were told. And I quite like that. I think the idea that obey, and I hope your production team are listening to this now, okay?
I like it, Roger, and you've finished right on time. You've obeyed the deadline. That's Roger Mosey, former head of BBC TV News. My former boss. Stay with us. We'll be hearing from the former rugby league player, Kevin Sinfield. Look out for him. As we speak, he's running 33 miles around Belfast, and he's going to do the same again tomorrow in Scotland. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Mark Simpson in the hot seat today. I'm going to do my best to keep it together during this next item because it's very close to my heart. We're going to talk about motor neuron disease. And for anyone who's lost someone with this disease, you'll know just how cruel it is. But be prepared to be inspired because we're going to hear from the former rugby league player, Kevin Sinfield, as he runs around Belfast today and probably what is the coldest day of the year. I think it was -2 when he started off this morning at the Ulster Rugby Stadium. He's raising money to try and find a cure to motor neuron disease. As we know, there is no cure as things stand to the disease, or MND as it's called. Kevin's friend Rob Burrow, another rugby league legend, had the disease and of course died in June. Rob's jersey was number 7, and 7 features very heavily in this latest challenge that Kevin has taken on to try and raise money to combat MND. What he's trying to do is run 7 ultra marathons in 7 days in 7 different places. As we know, a normal marathon is 26 miles. He's doing around 33 miles every day, more than 200 miles in total in a week. He started off in England, in Liverpool on Sunday. He was in Bristol yesterday. He caught a plane, tried to get some sleep last night and started off at the Kingspan Stadium at 7 o'clock this morning. He's expected to finish at Windsor Park around about 1:30, but don't hold him to it. He's had a tough day so far, and a short time ago, he let me know how he was getting on.
Yeah, good, with two blocks in. It's very cold this morning. You brought the weather for us, so but all good so far, thank you. But a great welcome.
7 ultramarathons in 7 days in 7 different places. Why did you include Belfast, Kevin?
Well, it's MND doesn't, it's everywhere. It doesn't just pick locations, but Dame Mary Peters reached out and asked us to come here. That conversation started about 18 months ago, and we're delighted to be here. So it's a great city, and as we've seen so far, the support's been incredible.
I'm sorry it's so cold. Have you had much support out on the road?
Yeah, we have, yeah. You know, at the start, Ulster, and certainly the both locations we've stopped, support has been incredible. Out on the road, you know, yeah, there's been people out on the street, and, you know, we really appreciate it. It's -2, -3 out there. So thank you to everybody who's brave the cold and come and see us and give us a wave and give us a shout out. So we're very, very grateful as a team. Yeah, the support's been wonderful. Thank you.
As you run around our city, what has caught your eye? Stormont, Titanic, anything in particular?
Yeah, well, it's a little bit brighter now. When we set off, it was dark. It was great to be at Ulster Rugby this morning to see the ground and to meet some of the players. And then obviously, it's a really special place. I was actually here at the end of 2015, so it brings back some good memories.
You're not even halfway through, Kevin. How are the legs?
Yeah, thanks for reminding me of that. no, the legs are sore, as you'd expect. They should be, though, because we did 60k on day one, 66 on day two. So, yeah, there's a fair bit of DOMS in there, but we're working through it. We're, you know, with Chris and Dave, who are running with me, have been outstanding so far again. And, yeah, they're keeping us going.
What keeps you going through the pain?
Well, we're not a choice of a, if I'm being honest. Because people with MND don't have a choice. So we're just trying to have the same attitude while we're out on the road. We've just got to keep fighting and keep going and giving it our best shot. We represent a beautiful community. Obviously, Rob Burrow, my former teammate, is right front and centre of this. That's why we wear the number 7. But the MND community is a beautiful one, and they fight, and the warriors, and I suppose we're trying to show a little bit of that spirit while we're out on the road.
Two last things, Kevin. We keep hearing MND, it's incurable. But there's hope in terms of staving off maybe the worst of the condition.
Well, at the minute, it is incurable. That's why we're out on the road trying to do our little bit. It needs funds. It needs awareness. It needs people's attitudes to change towards those who've been diagnosed and the families who are affected. So, and even then, when we find a cure, unfortunately, like always happens with things like this, there's always going to be some people who are too far down the road who the cure won't help, the drugs won't help. And for those people and the families, we want to make sure they have a much better journey. And there's obviously the drug side of this and finding a cure, but probably more closer to our hearts is looking after people properly and making sure their journey and their experiences are better than what they could have been.
Kevin, just finally, I, like you, have lost a very close friend due to motor neuron disease. I can't run an ultra marathon. I'm too old. What can I do and other people do to help?
Just do your own little bit, whatever it is. You don't have to run marathons, I completely agree. There's been a number of 7 in 7 initiatives on the back of our first one in 2020 that a lot of people have undertaken. And that can be whatever it is you're good at or you're passionate about. So the 7 in 7 has become something that's been really important to the MND Association and the MND community. So, but like I said, just do your own little bit. Our big message while we've been out on the road has been, we want everybody to have a great Christmas, but think about those that need our help and support. And that ain't just people with MND, that's people with cancer and dementia and all those horrible diseases and illnesses that are out there at this moment in time. So MND is certainly at the front of what we're doing, but we want people to just do their little bit, and if we do, the world's a better place.
Good point, well made as always. Kevin, we wish you well. Take care. Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
What an inspiration he is. And thanks to everyone who's been sending me their pictures. They've bumped into Kevin. Some people have been out running with him. Benny, Andy, Kerry. And Raymond is on the line. Raymond, you're going to do your bit as well. You're going to be completing the extra mile around Dame Mary Peters track with Kevin. I think that's at about 11:30, is that right?
Yes, well, that's what time we're due to be there. I'm actually on the road. I'm actually on the road now to go and collect Lady Mary.
Are you really? Well, if she joins you before 10:30, I'd love to speak to Dame Mary. That would be lovely, Raymond.
Mark, you better get her title right, because you know as well as I do, our London, it's Lady Mary.
It's Lady Mary. Oh, my goodness. Oh, I was going to say I hope she's not listening, but I hope she is listening. It would be lovely to have Lady Mary on the programme as well. Raymond, tell us about you. You're there for lots of different reasons, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm part of today's, because I'm living with AMND. I have this terrible illness, but I want to be the most optimistic person there is and go about life as normal.
How soon were you diagnosed, or how recently were you diagnosed? Because sadly, you know, the disease affects people in different ways. Their mobility sometimes goes very quickly. For others, they don't lose their mobility for quite a while. If you don't mind me asking, Raymond, what's your situation?
Well, I was diagnosed in May 2021, which is 3.5 years ago. Now, I'm lucky in a way that I have a slow variant of this disease. I know many people that don't get as long as I have. Generally, people pass on after a year, 18 months, but I'm still alive and kicking and doing what I can to raise the profile of motor neurons disease here in Northern Ireland.
Fair play to you, Raymond, you know, because you could have just, you know, locked the doors and thought, I'm just going to cope with this on my own, but you're out there.
Yes, I'm out there, and I want to get out to as many events as I can. And we've just held a gala dinner there recently, and for Mary's Trust and for AMND. So it was a great success. So always want to be out there raising the profile. We have a population of about 1.9 million here in Northern Ireland, and only generally the numbers sit in around 80 to 120. They never go above 120 and they never go below 80. So with that, such a big population, 1.9 million, only 100 people. So it's really hard to raise a profile.
Yes, yes. I hear you're stopping there. Are you outside Lady Mary's house?
Not just yet, not just yet.
Brendan Mulgrew has just sent me the timetable, because we know there's a big running community as well as sadly a big MND community or support community there. So Kevin Sinfield and his team are going to be at St Paul's Gaelic Club at 11:36 in West Belfast, all being well. They should be at the Mary Peters track at 12:30. Raymond, is that what you're hearing?
Yes, that's what I'm hearing. I need to just make sure that I pick Mary up on time, because you know, Mark, you can't be late.
Oh, she's a stickler. She is a stickler for being on time. You've got your deadline.
She's a really good friend of mine. And when I told her I was diagnosed, she wasn't very pleased. And her and I have been friends a long time.
That must have been devastating, Raymond, because everybody knows just how bad MND is.
Yes, it was really hard, because, well, the joke in the family was that if I ever won the lottery, I would call a family WhatsApp video conference. And when I called the video, my wife and I sat on this news for about a month to try and deal with it ourselves before we told the kids. Mm-hmm. And then when I called a family WhatsApp meeting, my daughter come on, she says, Dad, how much have you won? And I just burst out crying, because I knew what I was going to tell them.
Oh, Raymond.
Mark, I can't be helped. I'm not losing any stress over this because I can't change the outcome. I want to enjoy whatever life is left for me, and I want to raise the profile of MND, people living with MND in Northern Ireland. There's so many more people. I've been really lucky. I've been given more time, and I'm going to enjoy myself. My grandson and I go to as many sporting events as we can. We've been to Premier League. We've been down to see Ireland play. And we follow the Irish League champions, Lauren.
Not for long, Raymond. Not for long.
It's a long season, Mark. It's a long season.
Where are you now? I think you'll stay up. I don't think you'll be relegated this season. I think you'll stay up.
Ah, no, Mark. Don't be like that. It's hard being all over Europe, too.
Well, I was going to say, is that what you're blaming for the slump in form?
No. I can't blame that. It's a sheer pleasure to be taking part in the knockout stages, the group stages. In fact, one of the trips that my grandson and I done was go to Norway to see them playing Molde.
Gotcha.
So,
pity it was a defeat, but anyway. hold on, Raymond. We have somebody on the line that wants to know where you are. Good morning, Lady Mary.
Good morning. How are you, Mark?
Is Raymond late? What time was he supposed to pick you up?
No, not till 11, and I'm not dressed yet.
Put the brakes on, Raymond. Put the brakes on.
I'm speeding up.
It's lovely to be laughing about something so serious, because Raymond is a dear friend of mine, and when I discovered he had MND, it just shook me rigid. And I have another friend who was an international Great Britain high jumper, Debbie Mars, and she's also suffering from MND. And, you know, we don't hear very much about women having the problem. And we had a dinner down in Larne to raise the profile of it for both men and women. And we raised quite a bit of money for the MND Association. And I know Kevin quite well, and I'm delighted that he has decided to come to raise the profile in Northern Ireland.
It is significant, Lady Mary, because you put yourself in Kevin Simfield's position. He's trying to run 7 ultramarathons in 7 days in 7 different places. And the easiest thing for him to do would have been to stick in GB and not put 2 flights in there. But he's done it. And I don't know if you heard his interview earlier in the programme. One of the reasons he said he wanted to do it was to do it for you.
Oh, did he? Bless him. We're involved in a hospice in Rochdale together, and he's the nicest, gentlest man you've ever met. And to do this for his great pal, Rob Burrows, and to raise the profile of this dreaded disease is magical.
And it seems to be, I'm not sure if any research has been done, it seems to hit sporting people. Maybe that's just a coincidence, but it does seem to hit sporting people as well as everybody else.
I think sporting people have taken on the cudgel to raise the profile.
Okay.
I think it happens to across the community. But it's dreadful. You know, you lose your voice, you lose your power. But Raymond is a fine example of somebody whose family are supporting him through this. And he's making a show to help others realise that it can happen to them. It can happen to any of us at any time. It's a neurological problem, and until they get some research, we'll never have a cure.
And Raymond, do you remember when you felt the first symptoms?
Yeah, Mark, about 2019, I started to see changes in my body. I've been involved in sport nearly all my life, and I could see my legs deteriorating. My arm, my left-hand side of my body was getting really weak. And I went to the doctor, and after various tests, they couldn't find anything. And then during COVID, my doctor invited me to go to see a consultant up in the Royal. And after more numerous tests, it was diagnosed that I had MND.
And you picked up the phone and told your friend, Lady Mary?
No. Mary was down in Larne for a meeting, and she phoned me to say, "Where are you?" And I says, "I'm in the house." And she says, "Well, I'm in Larne at in a hotel." She says, "Come down," and I went down, and I joined in her meeting, and then I took her outside and told her that I had to. And you know something, Mark? I can say this. I've never heard a lady swear before.
Oh, my goodness. Lady Mary, we better let you go because you need to get ready. But just tell us what you've got planned at your own track at about 11:30. Or 12:30, isn't it? 12:30?
Yes, 12:30, yeah.
Yes, Kevin's arriving and Raymond and Debbie and I are going to do at least 100 metres. We might do the whole lap of a track.
Oh, Lady Mary back running again. Are you getting your old GB tracksuit on?
I'm getting old and it's harder because I have a bulging disc in my back, but I will do it for Kevin and for MND.
Fair play to you. We'll let you go and get ready. Raymond will be there at 11 o'clock on the dot. Raymond, while you're with us, I talked about this earlier in the programme. I had that dreaded phone call from probably my oldest friend. He lived a couple of doors down from me, 1 year older than me. Sadly, he passed away within about 5 years. But I couldn't believe that he was so open about it. I remember I was in Conswater Shopping Centre on a Saturday afternoon and he just phoned me and he said, this is what it is. I'm living in England, but I want you to come and see me. I want to get all our school friends back together again. And we met up the third weekend in January for the next 5 years. Sadly, he's no longer with us. I miss him. But I will always remember his bravery and his courage. And I'm thinking the same, Raymond, talking to you.
Well, Mark, yeah, well, you know, it's not just about my story. There's 100 of us here in Northern Ireland, and I'm very conscious that when I speak to people, everybody has their own problems, whether it be small or large, and mine's just one of those problems. And as I say, I don't lose any stress over it because I can't change the outcome. So I just want to remain positive, be part of the Motor Neurons Disease Association here in Northern Ireland, and keep raising the profile and enjoying family life, whatever's left.
And what, in terms of numbers, are the number of people here, would you say? Did you talk about 100, you think, suffering from the disease at the moment?
Usually the numbers in Northern Ireland varies between 80 and 120. Now, they never usually go above 120, and they never usually fall below 80. So out of 1.9 million in Northern Ireland, it's a small, small number. And events like today does so much to help raise the profile.
And is Lady Mary right? I'm not asking you to contradict her. It seems to be just sporting people, whether Anto, of course, in Belfast, or Dodi Weir, yeah, or Rob Burrow. It just seems to have been sporting people who have raised the profile, but it hits everybody.
But it hits everybody. And I am friends with the motor neurons disease, the people that are living with motor neurons, and I'm friends with a good lot of them. Some of them come from a sporting background, some of them not. I took part in a genetic testing, and I did not inherit this from my family, my parents. And more importantly for me, Mark, I do not carry the gene that passes it on to my kids. So I'm so thankful for that. I'm just a one-off, and you know, it's, that's the hand I was dealt with, and I will deal with it, and we'll enjoy whatever's left.
God bless you, Raymond. Just before you go, looking forward to bumping into Kevin Sinfield. Have you met him before?
Well, I was at the Kingspan this morning to see him starting.
You had an early start.
I just left Whitewell Tabernacle there. He's on his way up to the Tesco's at Ballygamartin, and then he's going up to the GAA club. So lots of people out in the roads. Boys Model School is out in the road. The GAA club's going to be out in the road. And then, as I say, he'll be heading over to Mary's track. So it's going to be a good day. Listen, there's plenty of spectators invited to come along to Mary's track to see what's going to happen there. And then finishing off the George Best statue at Windsor Park.
Raymond, lovely to talk to you. We'll have to meet up sometime, maybe at a Larne game.
Well, I did see you in Larne at the Coast Road Marathon, but I didn't actually come over and speak to you.
Well, next time. We'll go to a Larne game. Raymond, we wish you well, and thank you.
I'll invite you down to see the champions.
I better come soon because that's not going to last long in terms of a title. Listen, take care. See you soon.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And say hello to Kevin for us. The time is 25 past 10. Let's get a couple of quick calls before we go. John is on the line. John, what do you want to talk about?
I believe you wanted to talk about the pollution in Belfast Lough.
Are you a swimmer?
I'm not.
What do you think?
It's been pretty bad for a long time. I can't understand Minister Muir's insistence on taking the gloves off for NI water when he continues to protect the farmers with the Memorandum of Understanding with Ulster Farmers Union.
What's that memorandum that you're talking about?
It's a similar protection to the SORPI. It means that many farmers can pollute or break the regulations at will, pretty much.
Did he not say he was going to take on the farmers?
He hasn't yet.
Give him time. He's not been in office a year yet.
Well, he has come back with a high court, the senior court,
okay,
challenge to the gas caverns,
okay,
the case which was approved in court, and
okay,
he's pushing that. So
sorry to push you, John, but we've got another couple of calls I want to fit in before the end of the programme very quickly. Quick word from Fred and Dromore. Hi, Fred.
So we're just here. The farmer's being mentioned there, and I am a farmer, and I've got nothing special to say about polluting or not polluting. But anyhow, why is it farmers and food producers, including processors, have been paying water rates for years? They've been paying water rates for 50 years now.
Not a great line, Fred. We'll maybe try and come back to you. Brian and Inniskillen. Brian, swimming? Is that what you want to talk about?
Mark, can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Always can hear you, Brian.
Fair enough. Love you too. I wouldn't recommend cold water swimming at all, to be honest. I canoed in Lough Erne for years, but very sick at 15 and a half years of age, diagnosed with rat urine poison, which isn't pleasant. So go to a swimming pool. But my bigger question is here, we're talking about the levels of pollution, yes, I get it. But what are we supposed to do with the blinking stuff otherwise? Where is it supposed to go? You know, it would be interesting if the public servants of the water board would actually come on air and explain what is supposed to be done with it.
Well,
before
it's meant to go to a treatment plant, but we don't have enough capacity there.
But the point I'm making is that before it gets out to sea, treatment plant or not, what stage is it supposed to be released? Is it still basically poisonous enough for affect skin diseases or whatever? But the whole point of this is, what are you supposed to do with it anyway?
Okay. Would you go into Lough Erne, Brian? Would you go into Lough Erne? Would you go for a swim?
I don't actually. I paddleboarded last summer, fell in twice, and I wasn't happy till I got back on the board.
I was in recently. I tell you, the big danger up there is not what's in the water, it's what's swimming in the water. Those swans, I tell you, I got the worst death stare from a swan ever. Are they still there?
Absolutely. And the only problem is, it's native to the water. You're an alien as far as it's concerned, so don't take it too personally. Let's think about the logic here, you know. It's a lock, it's full of wildlife, and that's where they should be, us.
Good point.
A bit of rain on your skin, that's what it's for.
Good point, Brian. It's a home fixture for the swans and away fixture for me. Speaking of home, Mr. Homely is next. It's the one and only Connor Phillips.
Biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet at Stephen Nolan. Stephen
Nolan Show!